So tonight, we're going to be in Colossians chapter 3 in the beginning of verse, I mean chapter 4 as well, but I'm starting in verse 22. I think it's really cool how last time we talked about the relationship between us and Christ as the wife to the husband and the husband to the wife, and also as the child to the father, and now we transition into the relationship between the servant and the master. And once again, it is truly a picture of our relationship with Christ as the servant and the master. So in verse 22 of chapter 3, it starts out, "Bond servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in sincerity of heart, fearing God. And whatever you do, do it heartily as unto the Lord and not to men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. But he who does wrong will be repaid for what he has done, and there is no partiality. Masters, give your bondservants what is just and fair, knowing that you also have a master in heaven." And so here we see that relationship with Christ that we have as bondservants. A bondservant was one who chose to be a servant, they usually started as a servant to their master, and they chose to stay with that master. And truly, our relationship with Christ is a chosen servanthood, a chosen relationship with Christ, one in which usually servants, they don't receive anything. But in this case, we as servants to Christ, we receive so much. In verse 24, it says, "Knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance." That inheritance is an inheritance in heaven. So we do, we receive in this master-servant relationship. I was reading online as I was preparing for this study, and this one article that I was reading just put the picture of the bondservant in such a perfect way. So I'm just going to read from that about what it is to be a bondservant. A bondservant is a slave. In some Bibles, the word bondservant is the translation of the Greek word doulos, which means one who is subservient to and entirely at the disposal of his master, a slave. Other translations use the word slave or servant. In Roman times, the term bondservant or slave could refer to someone who voluntarily served others, but it usually referred to one who was held in a permanent position of servitude. Under the Roman law, a bondservant was considered the owner's personal property. The slave essentially had no rights and could even be killed by their servant, by their owners. The Hebrew word for bondservant, ebde, is literally e and then bed. I have no idea how to say it, but had a similar connotation. However, the Mosaic law allowed for the indentured servants to become bondservants voluntarily. If the servant declared, "I love my master and my wife and children, and I do not want to go free," then his master must take him before the judges. He shall take him by the door and by the doorpost and pierce his ears with an awl, and then he will be his servant for life. Throughout the New Testament, the word bondservant, slave, or servant is applied metaphorically to someone absolutely devoted to Jesus. Paul, Timothy, James, Peter, and even Jude all describe themselves as bondservants of Christ. Believers today should still consider themselves bondservants or slaves of Christ, as he is our Lord and our allegiance is due to him alone. As bondservants, we renounce our other masters, and we give ourselves totally to him. Because a bondservant of Christ is not a heavy load, remember, his burden is light. I thought it was so cool how after he talked about how the bondservant would go to the doorpost and, you know, they get the piercing through their ear, as a symbol that for life I am to serve this master. And it said, then he will be his servant for life. And I think that's such, that the bondservant who is a servant for life, chosen to be a servant for life to that master, is such a cool picture of our relationship with Christ, because it's not like we are just like, oh yeah, I'm going to be your servant today, and then tomorrow, or when I do this thing, I'm not going to be your servant. It's a constant, it's a forever, it's a life-changing thing. It's not a when we want to, we're your bondservant. It's for life, it's always. And it just shows that huge commitment that we have to Christ, just as last time we talked about the husband and the wife. It's just that same commitment that we should have to Christ. When we get married, we don't go, oh yeah, you know, if this lasts, if this, it's a vow, it's something that you go into with the intent that you're not going to break it. And so we see that same picture of, it's for life, it's something that we have committed ourselves to, we've chosen. And in verse 22, when it says, bondservants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as man pleasers, but in sincerity of heart, fearing God. So here he's talking to those who were servants on the earth, serving other people, other masters. Here he tells them to obey in all things your masters according to his flesh. So in this life, the people who are put ahead of you, the authorities, your bosses, your husbands, whatever your authority is, in this life, it says obey them in all things according to the flesh, not with eye service as man pleases, right? We're not doing it so we please man. We're doing it because when we obey those in authority, when we obey our masters, those God have placed before us, we're pleasing God ultimately. In verse 23, it says, and whatever you do, do it heartily as unto the Lord and not to men. And here, I truly believe that when it says, whatever you do, do it heartily as unto the Lord, not to men. In 1 Peter 2:18, our study brought that one out. It talks about how we're to be subject to our masters, whether they are fair or whether they are unfair. And in verse 23, when it says, whatever you do, do it heartily as unto the Lord, I think that's when we can apply and we are able to be subject to the fair and the unfair, because we come into it with the mindset of we are serving our master Christ when we serve or are subject to these people on the world, that when, no matter what we do, we're doing it as unto the Lord and not unto men. And in verse 24, it says, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. And so again, here it just shows that when we are faithful to our masters here on earth, faithful to those in authority over us, it truly is because we know that we are serving Christ. Christ is our master. And truly, we will receive that reward. In verse 25, it says, but he who does wrong, or, you know, kind of like someone who isn't subject to their master, someone who isn't willfully led by their master, will be repaid for what he has done. And there is no partiality. I think of it in Matthew. We've talked about it the last few studies, I think, or a few studies ago, where we lay up for ourselves treasures in heaven, right? And here in verse 25, where it says, when we do those wrong things, it will be repaid for what we have done. When we're laying up things for ourselves in heaven, rather than the things of this earth, rather than thinking, oh, my master is so unfair, or my boss, he's so unfair to me, but rather with the thought and the heart of, I'm serving God. This is where God has put me. And if I do this with all my heart, and if I'm doing my very best, then, you know, what can be taken away from you? In Ephesians chapter 6, Paul shares a very similar thing to the Ephesian church, talking about the bondservants and masters. In verse 5, it says, "Bondservants, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling and sincerity of heart as to Christ. Not with eye service as men pleasers, but as bondservants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart." So here we see when we are faithful here on earth to Christ, we're doing the will of God, with goodwill, doing service as to the Lord and not to men. So when we remember that these things that we're doing here on earth are to the Lord and not to men, not only will it not puff us up as a, oh yes, let me show off to all my friends type of thing, but rather something to please God, it creates a different attitude in our hearts as well. Knowing that whatever good anyone does, he will receive the same from the Lord, whether he is a slave or free. And your masters, and you masters, do the same things to them, giving up threatening and knowing that your own master also in heaven, and that your own master also is in heaven, and there is no partiality with them. So in the same sense as us thinking about our masters here on earth or those in authority over us and treating them in the same respect as we would treat Christ, we also want to think about if we are in authority over someone else, whether it's our children or our students, or if we're given an authority figure in the workplace, whatever, whoever you're over, in whatever sense, we have to remember that Christ is our master. He's a picture of how we should act towards other people. And so whether it's us towards those in authority of us and having that reverence or that fear for them, also as a master, making sure that we're merciful and fair, because we know that our God has been, our master has been merciful and fair to us as well. In Matthew chapter 6, verse 24, it says that we can't serve two masters. It's impossible. We can't serve the world and serve Christ, which is why I truly believe that in this section where he says, where it's to the Lord and not to men, it's because truly as we're doing these things where God has placed us, we are serving God. We're not serving man. Even though we are doing these jobs, these things, we're being submissive in the world. Truly, ultimately, we're being submissive to Christ. So we're not serving two masters. In Psalms chapter 123, we kind of see our relationship. I totally just forgot where Psalms was. it shows our relationship with Christ as the servant. In verse, I was looking at chapter 122. So chapter 123, verse 2, it says, "Behold, the eyes of the servant look to the hand of their masters, as the eyes of the maid to the hands of their mistress. So the eyes look to the Lord our God until he has mercy on us. Have mercy on us, O Lord, and have mercy on us, for we are exceedingly filled with contempt. Our soul is exceedingly filled with the scorn of those who are at ease, with contempt of the proud." And so here we see that the eyes of the servant looks to the hand of the master. That's what we're supposed to be looking to. Christ says, our master, that's who we look to, Christ. If we are looking to Christ, it makes it so much easier to act in that way that reflects Christ, reflects that proper relationship. In John chapter 10, I was thinking about this picture of the master and the servant. In John chapter 10, it talks about how Christ is the shepherd of the sheep. And Jesus, as the good shepherd, always appears as the good shepherd, right? He appears as the guide, the protector, the healer, the shepherd of the sheep who needs spiritual food as well as healing, care, and mercy. I think, honestly, it's the sheep and the shepherd picture is a great picture of the master and the servant. The one who leads and protects as the master, but also as we, the sheep, are following the voice of our master, Christ. In chapter 10 of John, in verse 7, it says, "Then Jesus said to them again, 'Most assuredly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep.'" The door of the sheep is the shepherd. Back then, they would put their sheep in like these like rectangle things, and they have one little way to get out, and that's where the shepherd would lie, so that nothing could come into the sheep. "All who ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief does not come except to steal and kill and to destroy. I have come that they may have life and that they may have it more abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd gives his life for the sheep." And so there, right, we see the mercy of the master, the good shepherd, as willing to lay down his life, willing to protect from that which comes out, willing to have mercy upon a sheep, right? Sheep are about the dumbest animal, honestly. They'll just wander off. They'll drown in water. If they just walk into water, their wool will get too heavy, and they will just drown. So if they don't have a shepherd there to guide and protect them, then they honestly will just die. And so it really does show that as the master, they protect, they guide, they have mercy upon the sheep, this dumb, stupid thing. But then as the sheep, we'll see that the sheep knows the voice of the shepherd. We as servants to Christ, a bondservant is one who loves the master. And if we love our master, we know our master well. We know that he's merciful and he's gentle. We know that he is just and fair. And we know his voice. We know when he guides and leads. And so as a bondservant who is in love with our master, we should know our shepherd's voice. We should be heeding his leading. When he tells us to go and do, we should go and do. And so that's why I think this picture of the shepherd and the sheep is such a great picture of the master and the servant. In verse, try to find it. I know it's in here somewhere.
In 10?
No.
Oh.
Yes, that would be it. "I am the good shepherd, and I know my sheep, and I am known by my own. As the Father knows me, even so I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And the other sheep I have which are not in this fold, them also I must bring, and they will hear my voice, and there will be one flock and one shepherd. Therefore, my Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it again. No one takes it from me, but lay it down to myself. I have power to lay down, and I have power to take again. This command I received from my Father." Yeah, that wasn't it, but
it's a good one, though.
Yeah, it really is. But I'm trying to find the part where it talks about how the sheep know. Oh, here it is. It's verse 25.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
"I told you, and you do not believe me. The works that I do in my Father's name bear witness to me. But you do not believe because you are not my sheep. As I said to you, my sheep hear my voice and I know them. And they follow me, and I give them eternal life. And they shall never perish, neither shall anyone snatch them out of my hand. My Father, who has given them to me, is greater than all. No one is able to snatch them out of my Father's hand. And I and my Father are one." So here we see that picture of the sheep knowing the voice of the shepherd, just as we know the voice of our Father. And there is that protective nature in the shepherd that it says in verse 28, neither shall anyone snatch them out of my hands. Nothing can take us out of the hand of Christ, right? He protects us. He folds us in his hands. He guards us as the shepherd, as the master, a master of a servant, especially a bondservant, one whom they love. They're not going to let that servant go, right? They've marked him in the ear. That servant is theirs. And it's the same with us in Christ. He's not going to let us go. He's going to keep us safe in his arms, in his hands.